Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Thursday, April 30th. Currently 36 degrees under mostly sunny skies here in Park City, and 39 degrees at the Heber City Airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at a mixture of sun and clouds today. A weak disturbance will try to throw a little precipitation our way as we go throughout the day. So look for a chance of scattered showers developing in the afternoon. That chance is going to be pretty slim, but the chance is there. Now, these will primarily be high base showers, meaning that we'll see potentially some gusty winds and some dry lightning, but not a lot of measurable precipitation is expected actually to hit the ground with this activity. But there is a chance, so we do want to let you know about that. Now, after we get past today, we'll see those highs today climbing into the mid-50s in Park City. Highs will be in the low 60s for you in the Heber Valley. Moving into your Friday, looking pretty good. We'll call it mostly sunny to partly sunny skies out there. Temperatures starting off in the upper 20s to near 30. We'll see those high temperatures climbing back to the upper 50s in Park City with highs in the mid-60s in the Heber Valley. As we go into the weekend, it looks like a fantastic weekend for any outdoor plans you may have. The weather is looking to cooperate for us. Lots of sunshine expected on your Saturday. Temperatures starting off around the freezing mark in the Wasatch Back. But as we go throughout the day, we'll see those highs. Check this out, climbing into the mid-60s in Park City on Saturday. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 70s over towards the Heber Valley. Once we make our way into your Sunday, we'll call it a mixture of sun and clouds, mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. Temperatures starting off above freezing likely across the Wasatch Back on Sunday morning with high temperatures in the upper 60s in Park City. Highs will be in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. Now, our next storm system begins to move our way as we head into the beginning of next week. Right now, we're not looking at a major storm, but there's a decent chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms developing both in Park City and the Heber Valley as we head towards Monday. High temperatures will be in the low 60s in Park City on Monday, upper 60s in the Heber Valley. We'll keep that good chance of scattered showers and storms into your Tuesday, which happens to be Cinco de Mayo Day, with a chance of those temperatures in near 60 in Park City for a high, mid-60s for the Heber Valley. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with the CEO and co-founder of Upwards, Jessica Chang. She'll be telling us more about the economic returns of public support for childcare. Interim Summit County Clerk Melina Stevens calling in with details on changes to Senate Bill, I should say, about the changes as a result of Senate Bill 153 and how voter registration records are now being classified. And finally, Park City Summit County Arts Council has an update with Kendall Kelly and Andrea Zavala. We'll be talking to them about all of the upcoming events. Look at some local news. Federal immigration agents were spotted around Park City and Heber City Wednesday. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it's still unclear how many people may have been detained.
The Summit County Sheriff's Office and Park City Police Department tell KPCW that Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers were in Park City early April 29th for operations. ICE notified Summit County Dispatch prior to the operations, according to Sheriff's spokesperson Skylar Talbot. Agents also notified dispatch when they left the county before 9:30 a.m. Talbot could not speak to specific locations, but believes all of the operations in Summit County occurred in Park City proper. Park City Police Lieutenant Daniel Snelson says the enforcement was targeted and that the department was not asked to assist in any way. She did not confirm reports from eyewitnesses who saw or photographed agents in multiple locations on April 29th. A bystander's video and other photos shared on social media showed what appeared to be federal agents around a car stopped on the on-ramp from State Route 248 onto eastbound US 40. A Wasatch Latino Coalition Facebook post April 29th said it had received reports from community members that ICE agents had stopped cars in both the Park City and Heber areas. The advocacy group says that includes instances in which high school students were stopped. Heber police did not immediately respond to KPCW's inquiry about whether ICE had provided notice of any Wasatch County operations. Park City School District staff also had internal meetings regarding the district's policies designed to keep students safe. Those policies were shared with district parents in an email acknowledging the ICE operations in the community. The district says every child is welcome and has the right to attend public school. The district says it does not collect or keep information about the immigration status of families or students. It says it maintains strict protocols about site access and that no student will be released to ICE without agents presenting a warrant signed by a judge. According to the Wasatch Latino Coalition, ICE can legally detain minors, but people under 18 should not be held in adult jails and should be held together with relatives. Immigration experts say no one is required to open their door, answer questions, or sign documents if immigration agents ask them to do so, and agents cannot enter homes or search people's belongings without a warrant signed by a judge. More information about rights and resources is available at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
While capital projects and water fees are on the agenda for today's Park City Council meeting, KPCW's Gavin McGuff has this roundup of topics under consideration.
Less than a year after lowering water rates, the Park City Council will discuss increasing fees in both 2027 and 2028 at its Thursday meeting. As proposed, the fees would go up 4% for the next fiscal year and 3% in 2028. City Manager Adam Lenhard said the move is an attempt to win back lost revenue from a recent rate decrease for single-family homes.
Last year, there was an adjustment, a large adjustment downward in the rate. It actually reduced revenues to the water fund by about $2.4 million. When we look at that total fund, that's a fairly large dollar amount. I think it's fair to say that decrease in revenue was probably a little bit steeper than we had anticipated. This is a little bit of a correction for sure.
Other water issues coming down the pipe include a discussion of raising impact fees on new development. The fees offset the water demands of growth. Proposed rates would increase water impact fees by nearly 60%. The city has not updated the rates since 2014, and Lenhart says the change is overdue.
Were it not for impact fees, then our existing water users, ratepayers, would have to pay for that new growth. We do think that it's important that growth pays for itself. The fee typically, I would recommend to council that we look at that more often. It's been 12 years. And we just, if we do that on a more frequent basis, we can make sure that growth is paying its actual share.
During its work session, the council will provide feedback on the Little Kate Road Pathway project, which removes a bike lane along the street to create a multimodal corridor. Deputy City Manager Jody Emery says residents have raised concerns about mixing pedestrian and bike traffic.
And so some of the path management strategies that the team has considered include striping, signage, education, enforcement, coordination amongst all of our departments, as well as doing bicycle speed collector.
A discussion of the 2027 budget will include a consideration of $35 to $75 million in city bonds for work at Bonanza Park to come out of the $106 million capital fund. The project's contractor, Brinshore Development, will foot the bill for the mixed-use development currently before the Planning Commission. But city money would fund supporting features of the site.
What that fund gives the council the ability to do is influence some of the additional items that a developer wouldn't normally consider. Things like the green space, the plaza, infrastructure, parking, additional parking, site improvements, or density choices that a developer wouldn't necessarily consider.
Also Thursday, council is expected to extend Recycling Utah's Bonanza Park lease until March of 2027, easing the organization's transition to its future Silver Summit home. Lastly, council will hear an update on designs for the Snow Creek Tunnel, a project begun in 2007 to put a pedestrian path under Kearns Boulevard. Gavin McGough, KPCW News.
Well, a comprehensive impact assessment was completed for a second year of the Park City and Summit County needs-based child care scholarship programs that reveal significant gains in enrollment and community-wide economic returns. On the phone with me, I have the executive director and co-founder of Upwards. This is the firm that released the new report. I'm talking to Jessica Chang. Good morning, Jessica. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. So first, tell us what is Upwards and what it is that you do.
Yeah, Upwards is a childcare company. We actually operate in the middle between employers and government, families and childcare providers nationwide. Our goal is to really help families afford care and then pay childcare providers what they deserve by partnering directly with employers and government to help fund a lot of the childcare costs, but also, help providers actually stay in their business.
Yeah. So how has Upwards evolved with Park City and Summit County's child care funding program?
Yeah. So Park City and Summit County launched the program in 2024 because obviously child care became really unaffordable. And we were testing to see the affordability, how affordability impacted the workforce. 2 years in, we have the data to measure the impact. But also on top of that, it's about showing municipalities that this is workforce infrastructure. It's not charity. Families reported relief from childcare costs and stayed employed. Providers got reliable payments and employers kept their staff and communities got measurable economic return.
Yeah, so that report shows a $4.25 return for every dollar invested. How do you figure that out?
Yeah, we really measured this on basically the first order part of it. So first, it was about workforce retention. 83% of families stayed employed because they could afford care. The rest pursued education, self-employment, or job searching. That's 2.63 million in sustained wages calculated based on the average salary of employed families in the program. Second, it avoided turnover costs. We know how expensive it is to replace employees. That's 1.5 times their annual salary. That's a standard business practice. And we prevented that turnover for 40 families, saving employers roughly about $3.95 million in avoided replacement costs. The third is about productivity. 18 families reported being able to work more hours because they had reliable childcare. That's an additional $34,000 additional annual economic output. But the big part of that is that was only based on 48 survey results. We know that the impact could be significantly more, but if you add those, just those basic costs together to 2.63, the 3.95, and the 34, that's 6.61 million impacted on 1.56 million invested. That is the $4.25 per dollar.
Yeah. And so what does that compare with, you know, other, you know, rates of returns of investment? I mean, is that high? Is that a good deal?
That's a great deal, but you know, we've also seen higher results as well. And there's been many reports, not just done by us, but by other companies, consulting companies that have looked at this over periods of time. This is specific to what we've seen in Summit County and Park City.
All right. So after looking at this for 2 years, any other outcomes that surprised you?
Yeah. Well, the obvious, child care is the linchpin. When it's not affordable, everything breaks. Parents miss work, they quit jobs, they leave the region. When child care is affordable, the whole system stabilizes. Here's the real driver, especially for Park City and Summit County. 43% of our families work in hospitality. A housekeeper earning $40,000 a year faces $1,700 a month for infant care. That's half her salary. It's unsustainable. So either she quits or leaves the region, but the scholarship lets her stay. Now, when it comes to surprises, over the 2 years that we've been doing this in Park City and Summit County, there are three things that really surprised us over this period of time. One, enrollment growth, right? We always know anytime a program launches, there's a lot of people that enroll immediately, right? And then it's much harder to get others to enroll. But we saw in the second year, a 30% year-over-year growth. Word got out. Families saw that it was useful for them. Employers saw as well. And they referred other friends in the industry. Demand spiked. The second part to it was child care provider satisfaction. 100% of providers in the program reported being very satisfied with payment timelines and support. In an industry that's used to late payments and bureaucratic headaches, that's huge. I think the third one, which is actually a surprise to me as well, because usually we see this over a number of years, but we've seen over just 2 years, child development gains. And we expected families to say, hey, their kids were in better care. What surprised us was how immediate and specific the improvements were. Parents reported kids gaining speech, motor skills, social confidence within months of consistent quality enrollment.
Now, is that because just they've got teachers, I guess, if you will? I mean, or they're just being paid attention to that they otherwise wouldn't be? I guess I just don't understand that correlation.
Yeah. So when it comes to quality childcare, it's about consistency. So think about this. If you can afford childcare because you need to go to work, right? You're like, okay, I'm just going to make do because I'm going to get paid this week. Your kid's in childcare. The next week, they're not in childcare. There's no consistency with that. Kids grow when there's consistency, right? Let's say you're working on social skills. You're working on motor skills. It takes months at a time to see those improvements. If you're in and out of care, that just doesn't work. But if you have consistent care, you have consistent growth.
Interesting. Okay. So as you mentioned, I mean, I guess given how entrenched, you know, Summit County and Park City are in the tourism and service-based industry, does anything stand out specifically about our needs compared to other communities that you work with?
Yeah. So the way that we see it is, especially in Park City and Summit County, it's really, the economy runs on hospitality workers, right? You got ski patrollers, you got housekeepers, you got servers. You can't really hire these from out of state. You need people living here who are stable. You can't have stability when families are choosing between childcare as a cost or paying their rent, right? And that's a fact that I was mentioning. 43% of the scholarship families work in hospitality and tourism, right? These are the ski resorts. These are the hotels. These are the restaurants. This is the backbone of your economy. So when the scholarship freed up financial breathing room, they stayed. They didn't leave. But this isn't just a problem with specifically Park City or Summit County. This is existential across multiple municipalities and counties. And we're seeing this when childcare becomes affordable, there's stability not only for child development, but in the workforce too. And across the board, economies benefit, communities benefit.
Yeah. So I guess given the results of this program, how does that change the conversation around childcare from a social service to an economic investment?
Yeah, so this is great. So Park City is one of actually the 16 cities selected by the National League of Cities for their prenatal tier 3 impact lab. And this is specifically to help other communities replicate this. We've also seen this become a U.S. Chamber of Commerce case study. So the interest is real. What makes it replicable? It's simple. Direct scholarships to families, direct payments to providers. It's data-driven. We know it works because we measured it. It can become more sustainable if it's as structured as public-private partnerships where municipalities cover base scholarships and employers layer on support via tax credits. So okay. The bottom line is, if you're a mayor or city councilor listening to this right now, and you see childcare as a barrier to workforce participation, this is proof it works. Call us. We've done the research. The model is there.
Okay. Appreciate the update. Jessica, anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah. We're really pushing to continue this program because we know we also still have a wait list in Summit County, and we want more families to be able to get this. And we want, actually, for the year 3 is for employers to really get engaged because there is new tax credits specific for Utah, which is HB 190, and we're ready to support employers to move this forward.
Okay, that was with the child care tax credit bill, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's Utah just passed HB 190, which combined with the federal Section 45F really gives a lot to employers regarding child care benefits, and it's a real tax credit, 80% back.
Awesome. Okay, Jessica, I appreciate your time. I'm out of time. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Jessica Chang is the CEO and co-founder of Upwards. Again, it was a firm that looks at child care and programs like this. Well, Senate Bill 153 was passed by the Utah Legislature during this year's session and goes into effect in May. On the phone with details about how this bill can impact voters, I have Summit County Interim Clerk Melina Stevens. Good morning, Melina.
Good morning, Leslie. So the Senate Bill 153 was passed last session, and it required that many voters, about 1.3 million voters in Utah that currently have their voter registration records classified as either private or withheld, that that information becomes public. And there's a lot of misinformation, so I appreciate you having me here today. Leslie, there's some misinformation, but there's also some options for certain voters. Right now, the voting information that is going public includes the voter's full legal name, voter identification number, residential mailing address, voting precinct district, party affiliation, and their status as either an active or an active voter. What elections that they voted in, but not how they voted. And there's a lot of concern about that. People saying, you know, people are going to know who I voted in all these races. That's not information that is created through the voting process. So your name is never attached to who you vote for, and that's never released. But there's a substantial amount of information that will be available through a process that people can go through and pay for to get from the Lieutenant Governor's office and from clerk's offices based off of this bill.
Yeah. Lawmakers argued that the change kind of aligns the state, Utah, with other states, and it improves election transparency. So is that a good thing?
It depends on your perspective. I mean, my understanding is that there's somewhere in the realm of 30 states that operate in a similar way as this bill is pushing us. And we have not always had this level of protection. I think it's like anything. Once you give people a certain level of protection or something in their lives, taking it away feels unsafe and not good. That being said, there are other states that are not operating this way. And some of the arguments that I've heard from legislators is, you know, well, before 2020, this is how we were operating. Well, according to a lot of people that are discussing this with their office, but also I think just personally, you know, a lot has changed since 2020, and security of information is something paramount on people's minds. And as far as transparency, perhaps this helps with, you know, campaigning for certain political for political parties, as they're able to get additional information about people. But I don't understand transparency wise how this necessarily helps Utah. And there's a lot of people that are very concerned, and people that are having to decide between, do they choose to vote, be a registered voter, or to have their information secure, and people that are actually unregistering from voting because they're scared about this. And I really take issue with that. I think it's really sad and really unfortunate and something that a decision people shouldn't be needing to make.
But how does it change from what people can currently do? I mean, what the information that's released anyway?
So right now that information is withheld or private, and so it's not granted to political parties. So how we've been operating for the last several years is that you could check a box and that information is not given out. If you're just all of your information, you can choose not to have it withheld or private, and so then political parties would have it. But aside from that, you have an option right now of not having your information accessible in that way.
Okay, so that's the option is going away. Is that what you're telling me?
So the option is going away. They've changed it to a very limited at-risk group that can continue to have their information withheld. But it's much, right now, we're operating under a system where basically anyone could request to have their information withheld or private. At risk is very specific. And so it just includes someone that is a victim of domestic violence or threatened with domestic violence, law enforcement officers, members of the armed forces, public figures, or individuals protected by a court order, or those people that reside in the same household. So, you know, spouses, partners, roommates, et cetera. But it's a pretty short list, and there's not nearly as many people that will qualify for that as the people that have currently been registered as withheld or private.
So these at-risk voters, how do they apply then for that status?
So they need to apply before the 6th of May. So we've got just a little bit of time left. The voter rolls have been frozen for the last little while this transition is taking place, and they need to apply by the 6th in order for their information to continue to be withheld, when the voter rolls go public again on May 25th, and so, or go active again on May 25th. And so they can contact our office, they can call, they can email elections@summitcountyutah.gov. The form is currently on our website at summitcounty.info/risk designation, and they can fill out that form, email it to our office, or I mean, they can drop it off or mail it also. Email is probably the fastest. And then we'll be reviewing all of that and responding to individuals if for whatever reason they don't qualify or if have misfilled out the form.
And is it you that makes that decision whether or not somebody is considered at risk?
So right now, with it being a new statute with SB 153, it's something that is in big discussions statewide amongst counties. The Lieutenant Governor's office is also offering support, but primarily it's something that my office, my employees, and I and legal will sit down and discuss and then have some discussions with other counties as far as how they're operating. And I've already spoken with other clerks that are obviously handling the same issue. And there are some interesting nuances because of some vague language within the bill. So we will see, like any bill, especially those that are drafted with vague language, there is some discretion, and we want to make sure we're protecting people and that we're abiding by both the intent and the language of the law.
Yeah. So have you notified voters? I mean, is something going out in the mail to let people know that this deadline is happening?
So that notification came in early April from the Office of the Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson mailed about 1.3 million letters to voters telling them that their information would be public unless they qualified and applied for an at-risk designation just based off of this bill.
Okay, so if you didn't get one of those letters, your information was public anyway.
Yes, exactly. That would be the assumption.
Yeah. And I guess, does this change what voters should consider perhaps before they sign a petition? Because does that information then become public?
I mean, when someone signs a petition, that information as far as the information that they put in their address, their name, address, what all the information on the petition, that is a public record. So that information just in and of itself, separate from the voting record, is something that someone could get access to.
Okay.
So yeah, something to consider when you're signing a petition for sure.
Okay. Again, if people want more information, they can just go online or send you an email, elections@summitcounty.org.
Absolutely. Or go online to our website directly to get the form. But please, if you have questions about this, there's a lot of concern, I would say, amongst our aging populations in Utah and people that are concerned that they'll, you know, be targeted. Someone will have their address. There's a lot of concern clearly amongst victims of domestic violence, which I know before the bill was passed was a pretty hearty discussion on the floor with the legislature as far as the risks associated with that. So there's just a lot of concern generally about this. And if you have concern, please call my office and we can chat with you about what the at-risk designation looks like, and also an opportunity to call your legislators and to have discussions if this is something that impacts you that you're very frustrated about, like many other people, letting legislators know, because they're the ones that decided that this needed to happen. So please contact our office, 435-336-3040, or email elections@summitcountyutah.gov. Okay. We'll help you out with that.
Okay, so the deadline is May 6th. When does the House Bill 153 go into effect?
So the voter rolls will open again on May 25th. And so May 6th is the designated date because we can essentially guarantee that your information will continue to remain private. If it comes in, I mean, you can submit this form at any time, but there could be a lapse between your information being public and continuing to be withheld if you don't make that date. But again, anyone can apply for this at any time, but there is that lapse if you don't apply by May 6th.
Okay. Melina, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Melina Stevens is Summit County Interim County Clerk. In the studio with an update from Park City Summit County Arts Council, I have Marketing and Community Relations Manager Kendall Kelly, along with Community Inclusion and Engagement Coordinator, also the Latino Arts Festival Manager, Andrea Zavala. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, well, let's take a look at the summer run-up, our rundown here. We've got lots of events. Do we want to start first with you, Andrea, with the Latino
Arts? The most exciting one.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. Just save the date for June 12, 13, and 14. We have, if you're familiar with the Latino Arts Fest, you know we have lots of things programmed: food, dance, folklore, art, artisans goods at Kenyon's Village.
What are some of the new things that we're doing this year?
On Friday, we have an amazing headline, Los Wizards, a Latino band coming all the way from Miami. On Saturday, we have a watch party for the Brazil versus Morocco game, and then a super after party after that. And then on Sunday, we have our regular things, but then we're closing with lots of salsa.
Okay, we're going to bring you back next month, though, so you can give us, well, I should say,
more details
in June.
Yeah,
so you can have a lot more details. And then, Kendall, we've got also the Create PC Summer Show opening in June as well.
Yes, it's so nice because this is now something that we continually talk about when we come in here, is that we have our Create PC new showcases. They happen 3 times a year, so our next one is going to be in June. So new artists can be able to apply. They can join in on the local artist collective over there at Create PC. So we're going to be opening up the applications to participate in the summer and fall exhibit. Those will be opening up this next month. They'll close in early June, and then we'll be reopening at the end of June for our next showcase. So it's always just nice because if artists are participating for a few months, or if someone didn't know about it, it's not something that's just so long that they can't participate anytime soon. It's something that changes pretty often. We get new artwork and things in the gallery, and it's so nice to see that new refresh. You can see new gifts and new work and just be able to start afresh for the new seasons. So summer and fall, we'll have a whole new exhibit that we'll be opening up at the end of the month.
So that's June. Open to any artist. You don't have to be one of the makers in the building.
That's correct. Yes. So we do have studio artists that are residents upstairs, but at the same, for this particular setup with Create PC, you just have to be a resident of Summit County. We do also work with folks that work in the county and that sort of situation, but we would love for anyone who lives in all of Summit County to apply for this to be able to showcase your work.
Yeah. Are you able to take everybody or no?
You know, it's not too often that we're having to turn people away. Sometimes if we have a lot of certain categories, maybe photographers or certain things along those lines, it's hard for us to exhibit everyone. But for the most part, we're able to really exhibit 40 plus different artists and sometimes more.
All right. How do people apply?
So we'll put out a call for artists. We have it on all of our usual channels, social media. It's on our website. We send it out in our newsletter. If you're not a part of our newsletter, to be able to be aware of all kinds of calls for artists happening throughout the state, that's something that I would definitely recommend for local artists. But you would just be able to apply through the application that we'll be sharing throughout all of those platforms.
And Andrea, do you see some of your Latino artists participate in the...
Yeah, sometimes I do. We have the soap, Roxana Land with soap. We have myself with alpaca sweater. So yeah, we can have some of them too.
Awesome. Okay. Let's see. We also have Save the Date for July 11th at the Oakley Red Barn for the annual Summit Arts Market.
Yes. So I think it's just fun. We really want people to start getting excited about the whole summer lineup that we have. So Summit Arts Market takes place in Oakley. We love being able to go on the east side of the county and be able to showcase a lot of different artists at that particular one-day show. This one is really great for people outside of the county. Anyone is able to apply if you're Utah resident. We would love for you to be able to apply. This actually is an open application right now. So artists can apply for the July 11th Summit Arts Market currently. That's going to close here soon.
Okay. And we should also point out we've got Summit County Fair as another way for folks to show their fine art.
Yes. This is a really nice community way to be able to showcase. It's, you're really just looking to show off your work that you've done, whether it's photography or fine art. We'd love to see more people participate in this. This is a really cool exhibit where during the fair, we have the fine arts showcase in addition to, they do home goods. There's quilts that are on display. There's baked goods that people people put all this time and effort to be able to show how talented they are and the fine arts and photography side of things, youth exhibit. What happens is if you submit your work, it's something that the county actually comes in and selects items to put in their collection. So you would be able to have your items potentially chosen to have on display with the county. And they purchase that as well.
Yeah. And is that going through your office or through the fair office?
So for just this particular category, the fine arts, we are there to help curate and be able to set it up. So it's pretty much all associated with the county and Summit County, but the Arts Council jumps in and helps set that up. We'll be there to take all the artwork. You can drop your work off at the libraries and some different locations in July.
Okay.
Leading up to that.
All right. And we also have another favorite summer event, the Arts on the Trails.
Yes. So we're going to be bringing Art on the Trails back again. We're going to be at this time doing it at Copper Moose Farm Stand again. So we're going to have it along McLeod Creek Trail. We're working hard to come up with some really fun and new activations and see how else we can really turn what is a mile-long trail that we activate with performances and really find fun ways to be able to show off different performers and folks that are in the area. Do you have any other like thoughts towards how Art on the Trails like ends up looking like?
No, it is my favorite, just to be in nature and have art and performances at the same time. And sometimes some of the Latino performers might be able to be there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because I recall we've had ballet dancers out mm-hmm. there. We've had Native American.
Yes, Cultural Fire came last year. That was really cool.
A different experience.
Yeah,
it's really
Park City
unique.
Opera came last year, so we can work with locals. We work with folks, you know, from Salt Lake City. We'll work with Utah Opera and Symphony. It's just there's a lot of different things that we're always looking for. And also, if you feel like you're a fit for Art on the Trails as a performer of all kinds of capacities and mediums, we'd love for you to reach out to us. Tell us what you have to offer and something that you'd be able to maybe surprise us with as a really cool performance for that. We would love for people to kind of show
Correct.
Us something we might not be thinking about.
It's always something new every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember an artist that she had just small pieces of paper and would show you how to draw or, you know, I'm trying to think of what it was. Maybe we were painting or something, yeah.
We have done some different activations. Well, that's another fun thing is being able to integrate yourself with, you know, our interns have done different integrative artwork on the trail, so it's really fun to be able to see things and then also interact yourself.
Okay, and finally we've got in September the Monster Drawing Rally. This is a great fundraiser for both, you and the Kimball
Art Center?
Center.
Yes, so we work alongside Kimball Art Center in a lot of ways, but this is the one time of the year that we both come together and put together this really great event. We love the Monster Drawing Rally for bringing all the artists together. So it's artists from a lot of different areas, the artists that work at Kimball, that work with us, that are throughout the whole community and area in the county. And what they do is they all show up and really just for three rounds of really quick artwork, drawing, and putting together their pieces. And then we end up selling them for really reasonable prices, all in this really fun, like loud flash, sale of getting the artwork sold to everyone.
Yeah. Okay. And gosh, it's 40 years for the Arts Council?
Yes. So we're really excited. This year, it is our 40th anniversary of the Arts Council being in Summit County and Park City and being an advocate for arts and culture in this area. We're working on a lot of different things to just have fun with the fact that it's our 40th year. And one of the things that we're going to be doing this summer is we are going to have a punch card. And so starting with the Latino Arts Festival, if you join us at that event and any subsequent events after that, this punch card is something that every time you come to one of our highlight events, we are going to give you a punch. And so if you come to multiple, say Latino Arts Festival, Summit Arts Market, Art on the Trails, and then you come to our 40th anniversary party, which will be in November, we're going to do that at the beginning of November, then we're going to be able to enter each of your punches into an opportunity drawing. So for every time you visit an event, you'll have more chances to be able to win some really cool prizes. We work really hard to bring some fun opportunity items to our events, and so this is going to be one where you won't want to miss that, because whether you come to one event or if you go to five, the more opportunities you'll have to be able to participate in that fun celebration for our 40 years.
Okay. Let's go through some of those dates that you had mentioned with yes. your call for artists. So the first one is at Summit Arts Market.
Right. So we do have the deadline for that. The deadline to apply for Summit Arts Market is May 22nd. We'll be getting back to folks very quickly about whether or not they're able to participate. This is one that is pretty, we have a lot of room because what we do is in Oakley, we hold this event at the Red Barn. And so there's spaces for artists inside, but then we're able to activate that whole parking lot. And if anyone goes to the 4th of July rodeo, everyone is pretty familiar with the fact that that's a large parking lot. So the more the merrier. We have a lot of room and we want to be able to showcase you. We'll have food trucks. We'll have bands that Mountain Town Music programs. It'll be a really fun time.
Okay. And that again happening July 11th.
Correct.
You're also looking for folks to submit artwork for our bus shelters.
Yes. So this is why I was saying signing up for our newsletters is a really great resource because there are so many opportunities for locals and people in the area to be able to put their work in practice and be able to get paid for it. So Park City has a bus shelter artwork RFP that's due May 1st, so that's coming up soon. We have seen a few of these come around town already. You'll see that multiple bus stops have been reimagined with artwork from local artists, and they're just looking to continue that. So they have requests out for more. You can submit multiple designs or just one, so it's definitely worth submitting for.
Yeah, and so all the artist is providing is the design. I mean, it's the materials are put together by the city?
No, you're correct. That's the design is that initial just like application for them to be able to be chosen, but then the artists do install it. And I've seen different things. I've actually seen some metal work pieces be installed. So some really cool designs that a metal artist has done. And then there's painting versions. Some of them look more like a mural. Others have a little bit more of just a geometric design to them. So it really just depends, but you're correct. The artists would actually be, once they're selected, they would go in and do the installation and be paid for all of the materials and all of that.
In addition to the small stipend that they receive, they would
get? You know, it depends from call to artist. Everyone is different. I don't know. This one I don't think has a stipend for submitting an application. I think that once you're chosen, then your design would be utilized.
Yeah, I always guess I've just, you know, because depending on the size of the shelter, you can get up to $5,000, $7,500, or $10,000. But you would also get that plus any materials cost?
Correct.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. And finally, we've got the Silver Summit Services Building. You're looking for artists to submit design for art benches. Tell me about this.
Yes, so the County Public Art Advisory Board is looking for up to 7 artistic benches. They're going to be installed at the exterior of the Sheriff's Office and Attorney's Office over at the Silver Summit Services Building. So this one is, there's a ability for you to apply for either all 7 benches, or again, you could do individual benches. So this is something that there's a lot of flexibility. You could end up getting the whole bid and being able to do all 7 benches, or it could be that they end up choosing multiple artists to be able to do a variety of different versions of it. So that one is going to be due May 22nd as well. So same date as our Summit Arts Market. So May is really a busy month for applying for some different art installations and work.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
We're just excited for folks to come into Create PC at this time. It's open and available for some Mother's Day shopping and some other things along those lines. We actually have one of our artists, Silver Sage Gardens. She has a lot of work in the gallery, candles and some wreaths and some really pretty items. But she's also going to be doing some flower sales there. So she grows her own flowers. This is what she uses for her wreaths and a lot of her botanicals. But she'll actually be having some pop-up flowers available at Create for your Mother's Day and or any just nice spring needs that you might have.
Okay. Kendall Kelly, Andrea Zavolik, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you
so much, Leslie.
Well, the Park City Library and Women's Giving Fund will co-host an author lecture and discussion next week with the author and researcher of the book Without Parents or Papers, Unaccompanied Migrant Youth Coming of Age in the United States. Written by Stephanie Canizales, the book explores the experiences of unaccompanied migrant youth in this country. Women's Giving Fund manager Rebecca Blanchett says the group's annual author series highlights topics important to its members. Last year's theme focused on friendship and featured the book, You Will Find Your People. This year, the focus is immigration.
Wasatch Immigration Project, as many of you know, won the big Women's Giving Fund prize at $90,000. And so we wanted to create any opportunity to highlight the work that Wasatch Immigration Project is doing in our community. So we decided to pursue a book focused on immigration.
Park City librarian Becca Lael says that Cannizzale spent 6 years researching the book.
Her 6 years of research followed unaccompanied youth in California and just studied their lives, their hardships, their successes, what they need, and is really an observer to their lives. She talks about what they saw when they migrated here, why they migrated here, what support that they might need, and some policy recommendations.
Lael acknowledges the book is academic, but says the lecture and Q&A will be accessible to a general audience. She adds that the library aims to remain neutral on what can be a polarizing topic.
I really enjoyed the book because it really opened my eyes. Something that I learned that I wasn't expecting was the labor exploitation of youth migrant workers, because they were often in unsafe conditions, were facing long hours, wage theft, way lower than minimum wage, and because of their status as being undocumented, didn't have a way to communicate that to the government.
The Women's Giving Fund mission is to strengthen the lives of women and children in the community by awarding high-impact grants to local organizations. The author's lecture starts at 7 o'clock in the Jim Santee Auditorium next Tuesday. A link to attend is online at kpcw.org. And Summit County's e-bike share program returns tomorrow. KPCW's Sydney Weaver has more on what's new this season.
Summit Bike Share will roll out a new fleet of lighter, more efficient pedal assist e-bikes May 1st, with 26 stations in Park City, the Snyderville Basin, and Colville. Summit County Transportation Planning Director Carl Miller says this year's fleet of almost 200 bikes will include a mix of old and new ones. Miller says the new bikes will use a different type of charging and pickup stations.
We'll have what we can call our light stations. They're not required the same capital expense to put those in. They don't require electrical power because these bikes have much better batteries.
New stations will also come online throughout the season, including one at Studio Crossing in Quinns Junction. Miller says the fleet will be speed limited to stay within the county's 15 mile per hour rules on all paved trails.
They will be controlled so that they will not exceed 15 miles per hour, and then we can either add throttle controls in certain areas so that way there's not a dangerous situation.
The county took over operations of Summit Bike Share in 2024 after an agreement between the county and a third party contractor expired. To rent a bike, users must download an app. Miller says that was another thing the county was working on to improve in the off-season.
We've heard complaints in the past that the app was clunky or that people couldn't use it. And so we believe that this new software will be much better. People will be able to check out bikes easier and faster.
Miller says those who already have the app just need to re-download it for the update. Also new this year is an access pass for residents who may be experiencing financial hardship. Miller says the county wanted to be sure residents who most needed transportation assistance can get it this summer.
We're going to have an access pass, which will really be designed for income-qualifying individuals so that everybody can have access to the bikes and get around, especially those that need them the most.
Bikes are $7 for an hour with 60 minutes of free ride time included, or $12 for 2 hours. Summit County residents can also purchase a season pass for $99 until May 15th. After that, the season pass price will increase to $150. All riders must be at least 18 years old, and helmets are encouraged. Sydney Weaver, KPCW News.
Well, the family of Robbie Wilson is hosting a fundraiser Saturday, May 2nd at The Notch at 8 p.m. The goal is to raise funds for Blood Cancer United after losing Robbie Wilson to acute myeloid leukemia 11 years ago. There is a $10 cover at the door to listen to Honky Blue Tonky along with 10th Mountain Band. The $10 cover includes a Taco Bell. All proceeds, which include the sale of any food or beverages, will go towards Blood Cancer United. This is for a 21 and over crowd. Every year, Blood Cancer United, also known as the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, hosts its Visionaries of the Year fundraising campaign. Several members of Robbie Wilson's family are participating as visionaries as part of the 10th Mountain team and hope to raise $57,000 between the team members before May 28th.